ॐ ज्ञानतिमनस्याज्ञनन्नासलक्या चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येना तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकृतामयं ददाति स्वपरन्तिकं श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुरिच्छनन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासदिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So our Uddhava had come to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan he realized that actually his devotion was dwarfed. He felt dwarfed in front of all these great devotees, like first Nanda and Yasoda, later he saw the gopis. He saw how Srimati Radharani couldn't even recognize that he was the messenger, but instead went for the bumblebee. And all these things impressed him so deeply that he was never the same after that. It permanently made him desire to become like these residents of Vrindavan. And this is truly the spirit of bhakti. Because Srila Rupa Goswami explains that there are the ragatmika devotees, or those eternal associates of Krishna, who are such as Nanda, Yasoda, or Subal, or Srimati Radharani, various gopis. All these personalities are raga atmika. Rag means attachment, deep attachment, and atmika means personified. So they are living completely in their very self, their very being is attachment to Krishna. And then there are the other Vaishnavas, who are known as the Raganuga Vaishnavas, who are following these eternal residents of Vrindavan. So Uddhava basically came to Raganuga Bhakti. He came to the point of following one of the eternal residents of Vrindavan. He had come to teach philosophy. Krishna had hinted it to him before he left. Krishna had hinted to him that he actually never left Vrindavan. So Uddhava immediately took that point and gave a completely philosophical explanation. Because after all, being the disciple of Brihaspati, he was very well versed. Brihaspati, spiritual master of the demigods. So that hint of Krishna was enough for him to explain. But now he realized that the residents of Vrindavan were just absorbed in deep attachment to Krishna. And that was really all there was for them. So in this way, Uddhava's response, once he became aware of the great depth of the dedication of these eternal residence, Uddhava became a raga anuga, which means raga means attachment, and anuga means a follower, or one who is a follower of those who have attachment for Krishna. And that is our position. We should simply become a follower of those who have attachment for Krishna. And it's like that. We just look for those who have attachment for Krishna, and we follow them, and ultimately they will bring us to the eternal residence of Vrindavan. So in that way, Uddhava chalks out a path for us, and we are like Uddhava, outsiders in Vrindavan. Because whenever we are in Vrindavan, it is so inspiring. We see so many wonderful places, so many wonderful remembrances, but when we hear about the love of the gopis, we don't have that same love. So in that way, we're outsiders. We remain outsiders like Uddhava. And even more than Uddhava, possibly. That we also discussed, because Uddhava was very exalted. One major difference between us and Uddhava is that now Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is present, and that of course changes the whole picture quite a bit, because even if we are outsiders, it is by following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we can transform in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There is this topic of Chaya Bhav, which I think is very important. It is the topic of shadow reflection. It is said that sometimes great attachment or great ecstatic love is manifest in a devotee who doesn't really have all the advancement. But somehow or other, such states of ecstasy may manifest in the association of others who have such ecstasy. And then one can borrow, in other words, chayabhav, one borrows the ecstasy of others. Beg, borrow, or steal. Somehow or other. And we try and get that ecstasy from the other Vaishnavas. And also, one can borrow ecstasy from the holy Dham, or from places where Krishna performed his pastimes. Or, like for example, you know, when you get an altar with so many deities, it does carry it carries shakti. You know, like, it's really so many different features of Krishna. So, like that, we are borrowing. And it said, it is something like a devotee who borrows a book, you know what I mean? You know, you can trust devotees with gold, you can trust devotees with diamonds, but you cannot trust devotee with books. Never lend a book to a devotee, because, you know, it's perfectly all right to never give it back for some reason. You can look at anybody's bookshelf, you know, and you'll find a book which has the name of someone else in there, or some stamp of a library, or something like that. Have you noticed? I have noticed. Yes, because, you know, this is a book, you know, it's like knowledge about Krishna, that's for everyone, isn't it? You know, it's not stealing, you know, just borrowing, but after a while, this, when you borrow, it just becomes yours. Exactly when and where that happens, no one knows, but it does. It becomes yours. So the same happens with this bhav that we are borrowing from a Vaishnava. At one point, it becomes ours. That's what it says in the Nectar of Devotion. We just borrow it and keep on borrowing and borrowing it. And, you know, at one point, it's just like, and people sometimes say, you know, I borrowed this book of yours, you know, and I still have it, and I really can't give it back. You know, I go, wait a minute, it's my book, I want it back, you know. So, no, I can't give it back because I've had it for so long now. I just can't give it back, but I'll see what I can do to find a replacement. I mean, incredible. But it's like that with Bhava, right? After a long time, it becomes ours. So it is explained in the Nectar of Devotion. I mean, translated in my own words. So that is very interesting. Because that is basically what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing. He is just displaying this incredible ecstasy. He's just like showing symptoms of love of God, and everyone is just amazed. But it's just infectious, and one just, even one saw that in his association, as he made the tour of South India, all kinds of people just became ecstatic, although normally they were not. Or we see the example that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not want to meet with Maharaj Prataparuda because he was a mundane king and he didn't want to meet such a person. But because Maharaj Prataparuda had a great service attitude, and because he had supported Ramananda Roy when Ramananda Roy wanted to retire and to take up full-time service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he was a governor in the state. At that time, the king didn't become upset. Rather, the king said, "This is wonderful, wonderful, that you are like giving up your job and just to serve full-time in the service of the Lord. I will pay you full salary." So that was his service, and for that, he got some mercy. So, but still Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't meet him, but then it was arranged, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Send the son of the king." The son of the king, a nice prince, with handsome features, sort of, well, dark complexion, long arms, and kind of lotus-like eyes, reminded a bit of Krishna. So when that son was sent to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced this son. And as he embraced the son became invested with ecstasy. He became transformed. Suddenly, although he was a nice, pious prince, he wasn't really a practicing devotee. But by the embrace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't just borrow, he just immediately became flooded by ecstasy. And he became a most ecstatic devotee, and then went back to his father, and when his father saw the transformation, he was like so ecstatic that he spontaneously embraced his son, and then that love reached Maharaj Prataparuda, who also became totally ecstatic. So it is very nice how that was arranged, right, and how the prince became the carrier. So we also can become carriers, just as we are touched, even when we are not fully understanding what is happening to us. And this is sort of how Krishna consciousness works. It's not entirely that we're understanding what's going on. Part of it is not so rational. Part of it is just, you know, the mood. And although we are rational beings and try to sort of understand the theology, but there is something about it, some taste, some taste in prasadam that is not there in anything ordinary. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he left, and everyone was in the greatest separation, but Lord Nityananda, by tricks, arranged that Lord Chaitanya would come to the house of Advaita Acharya. And then all the devotees were invited, and Mother Sachi was brought there in a palanquin, and Mother Sachi then begged one favor. She said, "This time, that only I can cook for Nimai." And when she cooked like she never cooked before. And it is said whatever prasadam was prepared by her, that prasadam was just so full of love that whoever tasted it became ecstatic. Because, you know, you have prasadam and prasadam, if you know what I mean. You have that stuff where you read the ingredients and say, "Okay, this is bona fide." Throw it on the altar, right? Leave it there for a few minutes, and, you know, let's attack the ice cream kind of prasadam. But, you know, Mother Sachi's prasadam was something else, right? Because her consciousness, her purity, her dedication was there. So this is now what we are looking for. We're looking for dedication in other Vaishnavas, because gradually we begin to realize that we are poor. That we are poor. Last night, I dreamt of Satsarup Maharaj, and he looked at me and he said, "Oh, you're still a sannyasi." I said, "Yeah." "Yes, yes, yes, definitely." Very nice. I hope it wasn't anything inauspicious. But, no, I took it as an auspicious dream, rather. But so it reminds me now of Satsuru Maharaj, and I was thinking about a book that he wrote, "A Poor Man Reads the Bhagavatam." And just the title in itself says everything. Right? A poor man reads the Bhagavatam. Here we are, poor, we don't have so much. And that is, as the years go on, we just realize, I'm just poor in bhakti, very poor, poor in my love for Krishna. And what do? When you meet the limits of love, then we need to start begging, borrowing, and keeping, and stealing. Beg, borrow, steal. That's basically where it's at, right? We have to somehow or other never go there where we can find it, where we can find such attachment to Krishna. Wherever it is, wherever people have attachment to Krishna, that is where we must go, because it is from them that we will get attachment to Krishna. And of course, with the added mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it goes very quick. So these are some of the thoughts that come up in relation to Uddhava. Then, in relation to the inner Vrindavan, I kind of, last night, also touched upon it, how the gift of all the acharyas is added on to the gift of Krishna. It's just like, all this mercy is coming to us, and from each of them we are getting something. Therefore, reading Srimad Bhagavatam is not just studying philosophy or doing a course, right, where one tries to put the whole Bhagavatam in table format. Columns and tables, and this goes here, that goes there, and then we sort of mapped out the entire Bhagavatam, and now I've got it. Of course, it's very nice if you put the Bhagavatam in a table, but still, that's not the all in all. In the Middle Ages, in the Christian tradition, we find that a style of reading is developed which is called Lectio Divina. Lectio Divina is like a prayerful, a meditative type of reading, visualizing what we are reading. And the Bhagavatam is like that. It's very slow. If you look at it, it's like a camera that moves a little bit each time, and you get like slowly the full image. You get a description of the Lord and his features, and it's a slow description. It's not just, okay, and a yellow dhoti, lotus eyes, and fruit, and peacock feather, blackish hair, blue dark, bluish complexion, done. Is there anything more to say? I think I got it all. No, it goes very slow into the detail. So it's the detail. I have When I became involved in Krishna consciousness, I was first in Vrindavan in India, but then I got really bad jaundice in India, and my visa was running out, and I thought I'm going to die here, and all these things. It was getting pretty bad. And so I came back and to Europe, and I decided to take a little break from the temple, because I was too sick. I think in the temple, you know, I'm just going to rot. No one's going to look after me. I had some realizations about temples in those days. So anyway, I decided to just go home for a little while, you know, and be nursed till I was a bit better. So then when I was a bit better, I went to the Amsterdam temple and I came in, and so I said, I would like to move in the temple. Right? I rang the door, I said, I'd like to move in the temple. And they said, oh, okay, come in and sit down here and read this magazine. I said, oh, I've already read it, you know, I read that magazine. I have it, actually. They said, oh, that's okay, you just read it again. Yeah? So, okay, that was what they told me. So I sat there reading the magazine. And then, after a short while, I saw that devotee again, and I went sort of like, I'm here. And he went, just stay there with his hand. Right? So I just kept on reading. You know, and I read the whole day, that magazine, again and again. I've never done something like that. I can recommend it. One day of reading one Bhakti Godhead magazine from morning to evening. Try it. And in the evening, the temple president saw me there and said, what are you doing there? You're sitting here the whole day. I said, well, I would like to move into the temple. And he said, oh, okay, yeah. And I thought, well, maybe they're testing me, you know, to see if I'm serious. I didn't realize fully then that they were spaced out and just forgot about me. Whatever it was, you know. I was reading a whole deeper meaning into the thing, you know. It's like a strategy, you know. Like, now I know better. Yeah.